when we're talking with Frank Prevedale at the District Education Building in Rock Springs, Wyoming. Frank is the curriculum coordinator for school district number one. The interviewer is Bernie Horst. Okay, first let's talk about your mom and dad and where they came from and how they got here and why and all this sort of thing.
Well, both my mother and dad were born in Europe, the Tyrol area of Austria. And for some reason, a lot of Tyroleans came to the Rock Springs Superior area in the starting back in the 1880s, 1890s. And as a result of that, as immigration continued into the 20s, people kept coming here. Why, I don't know, other than they were seeking jobs, because the Tyrol is not a mining area.
It isn't, oh,
no.
Okay.
And so there are two or three areas in the country where Tyroleans settled in around Pittsburgh, Kansas, around Staunton, Illinois, and the Rock Springs Superior area. And if you take a look at the cemetery up here in Rock Springs, it's real interesting to me when Norma, my wife, and I went over to Europe and went through cemeteries, it was just like being here, you know, the same names. German, Italian names, because that's a German, Italian speaking area. The Tyrol lies on both sides of the border.
I see.
And I have relatives on both sides of the border.
Okay. Were your mom and dad married when they came? Or?
No, they didn't know each other. The towns that they came from are there in the same valley in the Tyrol, but the towns are about 30 miles apart, which in the early 1900s was a long ways.
Mm-hmm.
And they met in Superior.
Well, like, did your father come with his family, or did he come as a single person? Or?
My father was orphaned at 9, and at 18 he was in Staunton, Illinois, and he had and still has a sister there. And then he came up to Superior, I believe, in 1921. My mother came over with her family. My grandfather on her side had come here before the First World War. And then my grandmother and my mother and her brother were caught by the war, and they didn't get over here until after the war. But my grandfather had been in Superior since before the war, about 1906.
So there are still connections, though, to the old country. And
definitely. My mother and dad both have a lot of relatives over
mm-hmm.
there. And my mother has... My mother still has two aunts and an uncle, all in their 90s, alive, and a lot of cousins.
Is there active correspondence
right.
between them?
And my father has a sister over there yet, and nieces and nephews, and yes, there's still correspondence.
Okay. But there's no mining in that area where
no,
they come from.
No.
And your dad did become a miner when he came to
yes.
Superior and worked in the coal mines?
Now, his father had come to the United States and worked in the mines and was killed in Gallup, New Mexico in 1901. And so there is that mining history. And then he had uncles that came over into Kansas and Oklahoma and worked in the mines in the 1800s yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a history of mining that goes back, but not over there. It's over here.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that, of course, was the Union Pacific mine that your father worked in.
Here, yes.
Yes, right, okay. They were married then in Superior.
No, in Rock Springs.
Oh, in Rock Springs.
Our Lady of Sorrows, the old church that they just tore down.
I see. I didn't realize it was that old, I guess. That would have been...
1929.
There wasn't a Catholic church in Superior, or...?
I think not. And as a kid in Superior, until I was about a junior or so in high school, the church in Superior was a little UP building. I can remember it being bitter cold.
Mm-hmm.
We'd build a fire a half hour before Mass.
Nobody wanted to get married in it.
And it was just a mission church, sort
mm-hmm.
of. And until I was about a junior in high school, it was a mission of Our Lady of Sorrows here in Rock Springs. In 1948 or 49, then it became a parish, St. Vivian's Parish.
I see. Okay. Your father did stop in Stanton, Illinois before he came to Rock Springs, Inn, and that's where he said his sister lived.
Yes, he has a sister there. The interesting thing is, just like when we get people here today in this school district, once you reconcile the wife to how this area looks, she'll say, or he'll say, or somebody say, well, we'll stay a year. And my dad always says that, because that area they're from in Europe is in the Alps, and it is gorgeous. Then coming to Stockton, Illinois, you know, it's pretty green and lush. And coming here, he always says, in fact, when he got off the train in Rock Springs, and some people from Superior came down to pick him up, he did not take his trunk to Superior. He said, I'm going to leave it here because I'm not staying. Well, that was 55, 58 years ago.
Mm-hmm, you know? Right. Now, were you born then in Superior?
Yes.
There was no hospital or any of that type of this. It was a midwife type situation when you were born.
No, a doctor.
There was a doctor.
I would think in those days most people were born at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in Superior.
Okay. How many children were in your family?
Two.
Just the two, yourself and your sister?
My sister.
Okay. Going back to schools in Superior and life in Superior, I imagine there were schools there for you to attend. You didn't have to.
No, Superior until 1962 was a separate school district and had a high school and junior high and three elementary schools. And it's hard to visualize now when you look at Superior, but it was in athletic competition in the Class A. It was a Class A school, which, you know, meant that it was a lot bigger than what would appear to be. And the district was a consolidation of Point of Rocks, Thayer Junction, Baxter out this way. The line came nearly to Rock Springs. Mm-hmm. The airport area was in the Superior School District. And it was the wealthiest school district in the county. And if it were alive today, it would be extremely wealthy because the power plant sits mm-hmm. where the Superior District mm-hmm. was.
Is there any other economic base at Superior at that time other than the mining? There's nothing like ranching or anything else.
As I recall, the big value, of course, was the coal mining. And then because the Superior District was long and narrow, there were several pipelines that went through and power lines that went through, and those were all taxable. So that really was the tax base, but the coal was really the...
So even back then, the schools and the city did receive, royalties from the minerals that were...
Not royalties, that's comparatively new, you know, the severance, but the under Wyoming law, the minerals that are mined are considered property, and they have to pay property taxes on the value.
Oh,
and so that's
okay.
what makes it...
Okay. All of the mines in Superior were then UP mines?
No, there were several companies up there, even in my lifetime, but before I can remember, there were several. There was the Union Pacific had the mines that were lettered. In Rock Springs here, they were numbered, number one mine, number two. In Superior, they were lettered, A mine, B mine. I can remember B mine being open. I can remember C mine being open. I can remember D mine being open. I cannot remember E mine, those five mines. And then the big mine was the D.O. Clark mine. It was the last Union Pacific mine to close because it was the most productive. But the D.O. Clark mine, the shaft went down through several seams of coal so that all those other mines, in effect, were incorporated in D.O. Clark mine. It was the largest producing mine west of the Mississippi. The largest underground mine at one time in the country as far as production. And it was several mines in one because it cut across several seams of coal, and that coal was all brought to a central location under the mine, underground, dumped on a huge belt, and it was brought to the surface so that it was quite an efficient mine. But in the late 50s and 60s, when the Union Pacific Railroad converted to oil on the railroad, there was no market for the coal. And under the law, since this land had been given to the UP to build the railroad across, they could not market that coal commercially. They could use it themselves, but they could not sell it. And so when they converted, there was just no market for it. So the mines closed. The Superior, the Leo Clark mine was the last UP mine to close. But, of course, when it closed, there was nothing left in Superior, so pretty much collapsed.
Can you remember, when your father went to work as a miner, like clothes he might have worn, special things, a helmet or lamps or whatever they took with him?
No, because all that was left at the mine. I mean, I think in earlier days when there were no facilities for bathing or whatever, then all that came home. But in my lifetime, that had changed before I can remember, and the work clothes and the equipment and so forth was all kept at the mine. And so when they came home or when they left, it was, you know, their regular clothes.
Oh, so then, like, your mother didn't have to wash all these horrendously sooty clothes or anything?
Yeah, that she did. I can remember that, that there was a day set aside for washing that stuff. And my mother, who is very meticulous, I can recall, had a washing machine. And, of course, they were all no automatic washers in those days. But she had just a washing machine for that heavy stuff. She wouldn't put her other stuff in that washing machine. And so I can remember that, the coal dust-laden clothes. And, of course, I worked in the mine after I graduated from high school, too, so I'm somewhat familiar with that. But, of course, I don't have the background. I worked in the summers and Christmas vacations and so forth for the company.
You didn't have to go underground.
Yeah, I worked underground.
Oh, you did go underground. I see. Okay. Was the city of Superior divided up according to these A and B and C mines?
Yes, a typical coal camp, as Rock Springs was originally. Superior was a little unique, however, in that there were two distinct municipalities. South Superior, which still exists, was privately owned, and by privately owned is individual homeowners. And it was homesteaded in the early 1900s, a piece of government land right in the middle of all this UP land. The UP attempted several times to buy it out, but never could. And the main street in Superior, a portion of it was built before coal was even mined, all on speculation. So that area, as you enter Superior today, is South Superior, a municipality. The bigger part of town, however, was Superior, which was totally UP owned. And it was divided. There was an A camp, which was on the south side of South Superior as you now enter. B Hill is the hill just above the main street in South Superior. That was all UP owned. There was then a second B Hill called Second B. The high school was there, one of the elementary schools, the Catholic Church, the Mormon Church. The Union Pacific and Union Together had doctor's offices. They were on B Hill, second B Hill. Then there was C Hill. And C Hill is where I was born, where my grandparents lived. And I don't remember that because as a very young, maybe 1 year old, my dad built a house in South Superior, and we always lived in South Superior. Then there was D Camp. When D.O. Clark Mine was built, it was at D Camp. When E Mine was put in, it was at B Hill. So there was not a separate section for those. But a very distinct coal mining town. And anytime you go to a coal mining town, wherever they are, you find that kind of setup. Mm-hmm. So it's hard even for me today, in Rock Springs, when somebody will say such and such address, I'll say, you mean number one hill? I guess it comes from my background because I'd say, they live on B Hill or they live in D Camp or they live in South Superior or whatever.
Okay, as you were growing up in Superior, I imagine there were many nationalities, not just Italians there.
Yes, right.
Was there a lot of traditions or festivals and such that went on the holidays and celebration or old country traditions that were carried on? Or?
Yes, Italians and the Austrians, the Greeks, the Finns, I can remember. There weren't many Slavs in Superior. The Slavs were the big one in Rock Springs, but for some reason there were some in Superior, but it wasn't that big. But I can remember going to Finnish doings, as an example, and Greek doings, and, well, also Italian, and, of course, the Austrian and Tyrolean. So there was that, but I don't think it was as diverse as Rock Springs was, a great many. Although I can remember as a kid a Korean colony in Superior, and they stuck by themselves, and the old Superior Cemetery has a fairly extensive Korean section, which faded away totally, you know.
Was there, there were any Orientals in Superior?
You know what happened there? There were quite a few Japanese, I can remember, as a kid. And during the Second World War, they rounded up all the Japanese and took them to centers. And you know, we're still fighting that one because they took all their property and everything. And suddenly, and of course I was 8, 9 years old, I suppose, 10, when the war started, suddenly all the Japanese were gone and they never came back.
How about blacks? Any blacks in Superior?
A few, yes. There were a couple of old families that had been there for years, and then during, again, the Second World War, Superior boomed, and there were a lot of, not a lot of, but quite a few blacks, and a lot of Southerners came from Alabama, Arkansas, especially because they had a coal mining background. I'd want to mention to you here that when this boom came to Rock Springs, it was not foreign to me, because I had lived through the same thing in Superior in 1941, 42, 43, where overwhelming number of crowds came. And of course, it wasn't as big as this one, but for the size of the town, it was. And I can remember the Union Pacific moving boxcars in on empty tracks, people living in boxcars. And then to alleviate the housing, they got to the point where they took a whole section and brought boxcars in, took the wheels off of them, and placed them for housing, divided them into 2 or 3 rooms. And there were a couple of hundred of those, I suppose. And then Superior was one of the places during the war, the other two being Cheyenne and Casper, that got extensive government housing because it was a critical industry. And the housing was short. And, you know, as you look at it today, being a ghost town almost, it's difficult to visualize that, but there was a real housing crunch.
Was this boom during the war for the railroads again? Or
for the coal, the mines, yes, because they were, you know, the trains were running, shipping all kind of war material, and the trains were running like crazy, and they just needed every ounce of coal they could get their hands on.
Okay, I'd never heard that before. I guess didn't connect it to the railroad industry that much or something. How about wine making? Was this a big thing among the people in Superior?
Big. I can remember, but barely, and my grandfather always told me, because he was involved, that in the fall, a train load of grapes would be ordered, not a boxcar, a train load of 15, 20 railroad cars loaded with grapes. And nearly everybody made wine. I mean, you had that particular ethnic makeup. And my grandfather was involved somehow with the Union Merck that did the brought the grapes in, and he and Joe Bertinoli, who was the manager of the Union Merck then, anything that was left over, they used to make into wine. And I can remember that the two, the Bertinolis and my grandparents, lived one house apart. And they bought that house in between because it had a fantastic cellar for wine. And the house was empty, but the basement was loaded with wine barrels. And beyond that, there was a lot of moonshining. I did not know it was illegal to make moonshine until I was a senior in high school, and a guy still blew up. And now my dad never made wine, and as a result didn't make moonshine, because the moonshine was made from the residue of the grapes. It was a brandy sort of, I guess. But I can remember after I graduated from high school, one noon I was going to work. I worked at a meat locker plant. And There was this tremendous explosion, and just two houses or so down from my folks, and I was walking to work, this guy still blew up. And so there was a lot of activity there. The windows came out, curtains blew across, and he got burned. My dad ran over and took him to the doctors and then to Rock Springs to the hospital. And I can remember the sheriff coming, but there was nothing left there as evidence. Somebody had come and taken the steel and the bottles or whatever, and it was hidden. And then the treasury agents got in on it, and they never did find anything. Now, the guy had the evidence on him, and he was hauled to court and fined or whatever became of him. I don't remember. But the interesting thing to me was that the law said you couldn't do that. But the code of the community was you do that. The sheriff that came was shortly transferred because he was totally ostracized. And, you know, so the law was one way, but the code was the other. And I guess probably I knew it was illegal, but I knew it was being done, but it didn't come home to me until I was that old, 17, 18 years old, that that was illegal.
That's funny. Now, the stores and the doctors and the different things like that, were these all part of a Union Pacific company? You hear about company stores,
yeah,
and company doctors.
The Union Pacific had a company store, and it was in Superior, the Union Pacific owned part, and it was no question the biggest store. And of course the Union Pacific had stores in Rock Springs, Reliance, Witten, Hanna, so that it was a fairly big chain. They had their own bakery, They purchased, you know, by the carload and split it among the stores. But South Superior had four or five privately owned stores. Now, I worked at a store called the Superior Meat Market, which was a locker plant and a butcher shop, and then had groceries. And then the Union Merc had a big store in Superior. In fact, it's at that time bigger than the one here. There was a store called the Workingman's Commercial Company that had stores in Superior, Hanna, and Rock Springs. We called it the Finn store. It was a Finnish cooperative in all three communities. There was an IGA store in its later years. Bruno Vitolo, who lives here in Rock Springs, ran that store. There was a bakery and grocery. There were several stores. That main street had quite a bit of business. On that main street in Superior, which is now pretty dreary looking, there were nine bars, a couple of drug stores, there were two banks, the stores I was telling you about. There was a Finn Hall, the Union Hall, it was really a busy place.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back and talk about your mother and some of the things and how life was for her when she was in Superior. You mentioned that she was able to have two wash machines, even though, of course, they were of that vintage, but
yeah.
She was able to have two washers. Okay, can you remember anything else about your house and, like, your mother's stove?
Well, I'll tell you what. I guess we lived what would be called a typical middle-class life. As a kid, of course, heat was always coal, but we had a stoker with that heat. Our water was heated with coal. When I was quite young, they cooked with coal, but I can remember gas coming when I was still quite young. So really, life wasn't really that much different than it is
mm-hmm.
today. We always had two or three vehicles. My dad built his house. It's the house they live in here in Rock Springs. When Superior collapsed, they moved it.
Oh,
and it's he remodeled it here, but it's really a, you know, a modern home. And
mm-hmm.
and we really didn't live all that much different.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they lived in the south, in the north Superior, the Superior part of town, I can remember as a kid, there was no water in the houses. There was a tap-like between every two houses, and of course there was no indoor plumbing and everything, but we moved from that, and my grandparents had moved later into South Superior, which was more modern, and shortly after that the UP modernized everything of theirs, so it really wasn't
mm-hmm.
all that much different.
There was like a city water system then
oh,
in
yes,
Superior
uh-huh,
at
yes,
that time
right, uh-huh.
which of course probably was built by the Union Pacific.
Yes, and the town of South Superior bought water and bought power from the Union Pacific and then sold it to those people that lived in South Superior. At that time, the power company was owned by an outfit called Southern Wyoming Utilities. There's the power plant on the east end of Rock Springs that still sits there. The Union Pacific owned that. They mined the coal. They brought the water over from Green River to serve Rock Springs. That's the water they used in the power plant. And then they serviced not only their towns, but also their mines. When the mines closed, then they sold that to Pacific Power. And Pacific Power took over the area.
Okay. Mm-hmm. This is kind of jumping around a little bit. Let's go back to the different groups. Was there ever any evidence of prejudices between the different groups of people that were there? Say, you know, the Orientals, for instance, were...
I really don't recall any. Mm-hmm. I really don't recall any. And I suppose that's one reason for an attitude that I might have today. I'm pretty oblivious of different ethnic groups. Mm-hmm. I really do not recall any.
So like, when you were going to school and there were, you know, say an Oriental family or child,
blacks
or black or whatever,
they
were just part of the community.
The only prejudice I remember is the same type thing that occurred here at the boom, and that was the newcomers and the old timers. Regardless of color or ethnic background, it was really kind of, they're changing our lifestyle and we don't like it, you know, mm-hmm. that type thing. That I can remember, but not on an ethnic or religious base. I do know this, that I'm a Catholic, but I spent a lot of time at the Mormon Church in Superior, and the other church that was fairly prominent was the Congregational, or, you know, yeah, Congregational. It seemed to me we traveled from one to the other. I think in a small town, and where, you know, you didn't have much transportation and so forth in those days, you had more of that sort of thing, a mixing, mm-hmm. and you went to each other's socials and so forth. The thing that came by during the war, when the Southerners came, was that the Pentecostal Church came to Superior, and of course they were totally different than anything was there. And I can remember as kids we used to go just to see what was going on, because it was a totally different thing, and they used to have revivals and things like that. But if there were prejudice there, it was strictly
Now you graduate.
Well, again, let me go back to finish what I said. If there were any prejudice shown again in terms of religion there, it was really the business of the new and the old again.
Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I asked that question was I'd heard the story of the Ku Klux Klan in Rock Springs, and I had wondered if that was just a very short-term type thing or if it was kind of in the area.
I heard that also, and my dad has said stories, told stories, but that was before my time,
mm-hmm.
and he doesn't seem to be serious about it, but again, mm-hmm. that was really before my
right.
time.
Now, you said you went to all of your elementary school, junior high, and high school in Superior, and you said after high school you worked in the mines in the summertime. Now, there again, I imagine, you know, you worked underground, you said. What kind of equipment did you use as you worked under the
Again,
ground?
Again, the D.O. Clark mine, and what you need to do, if you have time, or if somebody in that class does, I need to talk to my dad, because
okay.
he's a storehouse of old stories. By the time I came along, the D.O. Clark mine was the Union Pacific's first mine that was totally mechanized.
Mm-hmm.
It was also the first mine in the United States that was totally mechanized. There was very little pick and shovel.
Mm-hmm.
It was all machinery. And as a result, I really didn't get in on any of the horror stories about mining. Like when my dad first came, they were assigned a room by contract. Everything was done by hand. The coal cars were pushed in and out by hand, except when they brought them up out of the mine, mules did the pulling and so forth. But I missed all that. By the time
mm-hmm.
I got there, it was all electric, everything mechanized. In fact, people tell me that you go over to FMC and so forth with all the machinery, continuous miners and so forth. That was what the Superior D.O. Clark mine was, and so I didn't see other than that.
Okay. When the train switched to other sources of power, then was your father still employed or had he retired?
No, he was employed, but he stayed with them to the end because he was... one of the mine foremen of one of the seams. In other words, he was over that whole seam in the mine, and those people were kept on. So he was on pretty much until he retired, and after they closed the Superior Mine, then he was transferred into Rock Springs, and he was in on the closing of the company and so forth. So they moved to Rock Springs in 1960, and it seems to me for a couple more years he was still with them, but he worked here in Rock Springs, out at Superior, out at Reliance, wherever they were needed, so that he was with them pretty much to the end.
Was the community pretty much devastated when they closed the mines? I mean, in a very sudden type thing, or was it a very gradual closing of the coal mines?
It was devastating, as I recall. In, I think, 1954, the Union Pacific suddenly closed the Reliance mine, the Winton mine, then the Reliance mine. And so there were no jobs. They were gone. And the Superior mine and Stansbury were reduced. And then a year or so later, there was another reduction. And a year or so later, another reduction. In about 1960, they closed Stansbury. And the only one left then was Superior. They transferred equipment over, and they transferred men over. And they tried to make the Superior mine go. And then it gradually declined until about 1962. They just closed it. So it was, as I recall, really kind of a tense period, just like you're almost like you're reading about places now, you know, where a car plant is down, and then suddenly it's gone. That's kind of how it was.
And there wasn't at that time any other source of economy in the community.
No,
it was just closed. I mean, it was just nothing. Can you remember then the time when the startup of the Trona mines and?
You know, I think that's one thing that saved Rock Springs even, because the Rock Springs' total economy, well, not total, but 90% of it was based on coal. And as I can recall, FMC began to pick up as these went down. So those people that were young enough, a lot of them transferred over to FMC. And I think that's why in the early stages of the Trona industry, 90% of the employees lived in Rock Springs, because it was those coal miners that just switched jobs. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of saved it. But even at that, there were 2,500 or so coal miners put out of work in that short span, and so there was a great migration out. The county itself lost 25% of its population from 50 to 60. So all of them didn't get jobs, but that was really kind of a stabilizing thing.
We're going to go backwards again to Superior. When you were in high school, and were most of the activities that the young people in Superior participated in kind of centered around the church, the school, or?
Yes, I think the school, a great deal of it, not as much as we see in some of our small schools today, because it was a little bigger than that. The churches had quite a bit of activity. The unions, who were mighty strong, had a lot of youth activities. And of course, there was American Legion baseball. There was swimming in Superior. During the 30s, the WPA built a swimming pool out there. So that there were a lot of community activities. I think kids were attuned differently those days, though. We did a lot of stuff out in the hills, you know, with bows and arrows. And we went on overnight hikes out onto the desert, a lot of springs around Superior. So that a lot of activities. And there was no television in those days, of course, so you invented a lot more. So a lot of the activities were really out in the country, too, as I recall. But in the wintertime, the school, the church.
Okay. What that swimming pool in Superior has always, I know, is brought up many times by people who have lived there. Do you want to tell about the construction of that and how it worked and where the water came from?
Well, at Superior today, there is still a small park that has survived, and now the city and the county are putting money into it, and the high school football field were right together, and the swimming pool was in that complex. It was built by the WPA. It was concrete. It was outdoor pool. Had, as I recall, wooden dressing rooms. The water was not heated. It was pretty cool. We spent a heck of a lot of time there in the summer, you know.
Was there one side, were all four sides concrete?
And the floor, okay. and the deck was all concrete.
Oh, okay. Really a modern pool then.
Yeah, which I would imagine in those days in the 30s, probably all pools. You probably had very little tiling. It was probably all pools were that. I was up there the other day, and they have covered it in, but the pool now, the dirt has sunk, and the pool itself is visible, the outline of it. Mm-hmm. It brought back a lot of memories.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you graduated from Superior and then went to the University of Wyoming, right? And you're a graduate at the university?
Yes.
And did you teach anywhere else before you came to Rock Springs?
Yes, I taught in Clarkson and Columbus, Nebraska. And then I went to the Army. And then when I got out of the Army in January, I was called, or my mother or father had been called and said that they had this person leaving at semester and they heard I was coming home somehow. And would I come down and talk to him? Well, I had no intention. I was heading straight back for Nebraska. Loved it. Had no intention of coming here. So anyway, I came, and the job was an English job, and it was for just the half a year, and I was going to leave. And then that spring, the speech job opened up, and that's really what I wanted to teach. And I said, gee, I better give it a try. I've been here. That was in 1957.
Okay, and at that time, was the city in that depression period after the
definitely.
Coal mines?
Yes, it was entering into that period. Mm-hmm. It was a depressed economy here in Rock Springs.
Did that influence the schools and their activities quite a bit, or were people still pretty interested in keeping their schools up in top-notch type?
Yeah, really, there's kind of a real basic support for schools here, I think. And I think there was among the generation that was, the taxpayer at that time. They had come from Europe. They had really struggled. And it seems to me that the general population here in the schools were number one, that you supported that because that's how we were going to make a better life for our kids. And mm-hmm. So it seems that there was real good support even all through that period.
What can you remember the amount of your first salary? That's always interesting to know.
Yes, I can remember the amount of my first salary. In 1957, I was hired at Rock Springs High School for $3,600 a year. And that would not have been the normal account, but they gave me credit for teaching in Nebraska a couple of years. And then they gave me credit for 2 years in the Army. And so, in effect, I came in on their fifth step. So I don't know. I would imagine that for a beginning teacher, it was probably under $3,000. Mm-hmm. But because I had that, they boosted it a little.
Okay, and you taught in this building, right?
The present East Junior High was the Rock Springs High School. And that was before they added the wing on the west end of the building and also the shops and the music and wrestling facilities in the back. So it was really kind of a stark, stubby building, then.
Mm-hmm.
And the present district administration building was the junior high school.
Oh, okay.
And then there were about four elementary schools that fed into it. And at that time, the district was strictly Rock Springs. Reliance was a separate district. Farson is a separate district. Superior is a separate district. Wamsutter, all mm-hmm. those things that belong now came in the late 60s and early 70s under consolidation.
Okay. I want to go back now to Superior again. Can you remember the number of seniors in your graduating class?
Yeah, we graduated with 32.
So they were like probably over 100 in your high school.
Oh, yes, and keep in mind that with that 32, we were already on the decline mm-hmm. because the classes ahead of me were in the 50s,
okay.
40s and 50s, so that the high school grades 9 through 12, usually over 200, mm-hmm. which was a fairly good-sized high school for Wyoming mm-hmm. in those days.
Yeah. Was that about equivalent to Reliance at that time?
Reliance was always somewhat smaller.
Okay, how about Rock Springs? What was the?
When I came to Rock Springs in 1957, there were about 500 in the high school, mm-hmm. and that was grades 9 through 12. So that you took 500 here and 200 in Superior, it really wasn't mm-hmm. all that much different. The other thing was that Green River High School was about the same size, somewhat smaller than Superior High School all through those years. Mm-hmm. Give you a little bit of comparison there.
And in those days, the activities were pretty much like Superior played basketball with Rock Springs Reliance. The interstate travel was...
not a problem in those days. We played Superior, played... Reliance was in the B League.
Oh, okay.
Superior was in the A League. Later, about my junior or senior year, Reliance came into the A League, and they had a couple of fantastic ball teams then. But during most of the time I was in high school, it was Rock Springs, Green River, Evanston, Kemmer, Rollins. Pretty much those. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you didn't travel. I mean, you traveled in Southwest Wyoming. The league was a Southwest Wyoming league. Mm-hmm. It's not. It wasn't spread out all over the state like
right.
it is today. And what happened, you had some towns grew faster and it became disjointed sort of, and they made a double A league. Mm-hmm. I can remember this though. About 47, I would say, or 48, when the double A league came by, was the last year we played Rock Springs in football. And of course that was always our big rivalry. Everybody tried to beat Rock Springs. And we beat them 2-0 in a snowstorm in football, and I like to rub that in a bit.
Were those the most prominent activities in school then, the basketball, football?
It seems to me there were three sports, track, football, and basketball. Mm-hmm. And basketball, of course, is the big one.
When you were going to school, were there very many sports for women at that time?
None that I can recall.
Mostly just...
Yeah, that's a new development, really, mm-hmm. you know, comparatively. There were no girl sports.
Okay. Norma is not a native of Wyoming.
Norma is
she?
From Massachusetts.
And can you tell the story of how she found
her
way to Wyoming?
Well, she came out here to teach. And she taught in this the old junior high, the district administration building. Norma knew some people in Rock Springs, had never been west, but she wrote to Rock Springs and she was offered a job.
Mm-hmm.
So I met her here. Mm-hmm. Got married here.
I wondered how she had, from back there, found out
about
a job.
Well, the interesting thing
position.
Is she didn't come from Massachusetts to here. She had gone to school in Alabama.
Oh,
and
wow.
She came from Alabama to here. So she's traveled all over the world. But
You said that Norma and yourself had taken a trip back to Italy to visit, you know, relatives and such. When are they eager to and very hospitable to you, or do they... How do they treat you as an American when you go over there?
Very eager. But then I think maybe it's because of the closeness of those families and the fact that they still correspond.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember when we went that my dad wrote to his relatives, my mother wrote to her relatives, said we were coming in June of 1975, and that, you know, they'd like for us to meet them and so forth. Well, they got together, the groups, and the decision was made that we would stay with my dad's nephew. It's very male-oriented over there. The decision was made that we would stay with my dad's side of the family, primarily, and that there's one nephew, the rest are nieces. We would stay at the nephew's house. So he's the one that came to the airport to pick us up, and that he's the one that made the arrangements to, if we wanted to travel or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we visited back and forth, and we stayed a couple of nights here and a couple of nights there, but essentially the male, on the male side of the family, was in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And that was interesting to me. But they were real eager, and they all wanted us to spend time. It was really a keen experience, because when I went to my mother's side of the family, they're very, very, very Austrian, and they hate Italians, and that's how my grandfather was. On my dad's side of the family, very Italian, had been educated, very well-to-do, and like I say, they were on both sides of the border. The borders moved back and forth in wars, and so they identify with one side or the other. But there's a very definite split,
mm-hmm.
which is like home.
Have
like
they
home.
Ever had the opportunity to come to Rock Springs and
Interestingly,
visit?
Yes. That nephew had been here the year before, and that's really the reason that my dad really wanted us to go over while people were still alive and so
mm-hmm.
forth. But he kept saying, you come over, you come over. So, yeah, they had been here.
That's interesting. Okay, let's pursue this question about the politics in Superior. You said that it was Democratic. So apparently this whole southwestern community...
Sweetwater County, again, before my time, what I read and what my dad tells me is that prior to the Roosevelt election in 1932, it was a Republican county. And Roosevelt, the depths of the Depression, of course, he carried the country, but he carried Sweetwater County. And one of the items that happened in his early administration was that unions were given status. Prior to that, you really could not form unions. So unions were given status, and the lot of the miner improved dramatically, and the county became heavily Democratic, and Superior even more so. I can remember the Democratic politicians, governor, senator, so forth, the Democrats, always closed campaigns in Superior. It was important to them. They used to deliver 1,200-1,500 Democratic votes versus 10 or 12 Republican votes, or 20 maybe, very few. So it was very, very heavily Democratic. When I left Superior to go to the University of Wyoming, it dawned on me that Wyoming was a Republican state, because that simply did not appear there or in the county. Union was Democratic, and most of the members, residents were union members. I can remember going to the Union Hall for dances, and they had a stage in that Union Hall. On one side was a huge picture of John L. Lewis, but on the other side was an equally huge picture of Franklin Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. And of the Roosevelt attitude toward unions, mm-hmm. Which was to, in effect, legalize them. Mm-hmm. So that it became quite Democratic in 1932, and it's retained that, not as heavily today, but...
Was your dad involved in politics as you are?
My dad was the mayor of South Superior for a while. He was on the council there for years, and he was also involved in Democratic politics. I guess that's where I get it. I can remember him receiving a letter after the 1948 election from Lester C. Hunt, who had just been elected to the U.S. Senate, congratulating him on the huge majority that he had received in that precinct, Lester Hunt had received. My dad, I think, probably still has that letter in his trunk somewhere. But as a precinct committeeman, it really wasn't difficult. You didn't have to go out and knock on doors and say, come out and vote Democratic, because everybody did, you know.
So there was a mayor for South Superior, mayor for Superior?
Yeah, except that the mayor and council in South Superior were elected, you know, in a regular election as they are now. In North Superior, pretty much the superintendent of mines was mayor. The Union Pacific owned the town, lock, stock, and barrel, and their people were in power. Their people were also on the school board. Superior had three, South Superior had two, Pointer Rocks had one on that school board, and the three from Superior were Union Pacific. South Superior, the two were sometimes a businessman, oftentimes a Union Pacific employee. So the Union Pacific controlled things. It was a company town. The school, as an example, in Superior and in Reliance, was designed in Omaha by the Union Pacific. The high school here in Rock Springs was approved by the Union Pacific in Omaha. That's the East Junior High now, before it was built. The Union Pacific pretty much told you what you were going to spend and what you were going to have in it and so forth.
I see. Was there ways that the Union Pacific controlled their lives and other things? How about in politics?
I think they tried to exert it, and I think that was one. I think that's one reason why the county too is Democratic. I think that there was a reaction. The Union Pacific and its candidates were fairly much Republican, and I think that when the employees, the unions, began to feel a little bit of strength, it was automatic that they went the opposite way. Mm-hmm. And I do believe. I don't have anything to substantiate that, but I believe that that's part of it.
One story that I've heard about Rock Springs is that the Union Pacific owned you know, so much land, and that at one time they made this decree that they weren't going to sell any more land to the people in Rock Springs. And so if your daughter or son were married, you would have to build them a house on your land that you already own. Is this a true story? Or?
I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
Uh-huh.
I do know this, that when I came to Rock Springs as late as 1957, everything east of Bitter Creek, there by the Greek Church, mm-hmm. and the Rose Motel, you cross that bridge there, that is number four. That was totally UP owned. Since then, they sold it off.
Mm-hmm.
Here on Broadway, it was 4th Street then. It was all Union Pacific Coal Company houses. Prior to that, they owned even more. But as the mines closed, they began mm-hmm. to sell it off. So they had the power to do that, I'm sure, mm-hmm. if they mm-hmm. wanted to do it. I can remember also that number four area had more trees, more lawns than anybody else, because it was the UP area. Either the water was free from the UP, or it was much cheaper than it was in the rest of town, so it was much greener in the UP areas.
Mm-hmm. You were living in Rock Springs then. In fact, you were living in that area where some of the early subsidence occurred.
Yeah, I lived right over the top of it, as a matter
yeah.
of fact.
Can
in the
you...
last subsidence, it never hit my house, but it hit the people behind us.
Yeah. Can you relate some of the early signs that these people had occur in their homes?
Sure. First of all, when I bought a house on Pennsylvania, which is near the Mountain Fuel offices on D Street, I happened to have some Union Pacific maps that showed what was mined and what wasn't mined. It showed the house I was going to buy had it wasn't undermined. It did show that the street in front, however, was undermined. So I felt okay buying the house. So shortly after we bought the house, a year or two after, it began, subsidence began to occur, and it occurred in the first over at the mountain, with the Mountain Fuel house. There were strange things happening, like the concrete began to crack in the foundations, and then concrete began to spit out, sort of, you know, in little chunks as the pressure forced it, and then steps would suddenly be a little bit crooked. And then that ended, and a year or two later, it kind of moved across the street. And it was a very, very slow thing. You know, it wasn't a sudden collapse. Mm-hmm. It was just a slow movement so that a driveway would begin to become crooked, or that a portion of it would sink, or that the sidewalk would sink slightly. Then pretty soon, a door wouldn't close. And then it got so bad that, of course, as it went along, the house would just begin to break up.
Mm-hmm.
So the city got federal money, and these people were paid off, but not nearly what the value was, and they put a park in there. But I would guess there were about 14 or 15 houses affected, none mm-hmm. on Pennsylvania, but across the alley from Pennsylvania. I can remember coming home one Sunday from the mountain, Sunday afternoon, there was a big crowd outside, and the house right behind us, the whole yard had collapsed. You know, it wasn't slow anymore, it collapsed, but just about a foot. But if you have under half of your house, a foot, go down a foot, you know there's a lot of damage to the house.
Yeah.
So it was kind of tense.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember them drilling all around us, and they found the mine in the street in front of us was only 45 feet beneath the surface. And the mine, of course, the opening of the mine was close by there, and so it wasn't as deep as it gets later. It was still fairly close mm-hmm. to the surface. So there was a lot of damage. There was mm-hmm. a lot of, you know, anxiety about
right.
Will the gas lines break tonight
yeah.
type thing. But it wasn't that type of thing. You weren't going to get a sudden snap.
Yeah.
You know, you were just going to see a gradual change.